Voices of VR podcast.
Hello, my name is Ken Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So in today's episode, I'm going to be talking about 8 p.m. and the Cat, which is a part of the competition at Venice Immersive 2025. So this is a piece that is dealing with death and loss and grief of a primary partner, all the pain and suffering that's associated, and you're kind of exploring that through the lens of the spatial context, the architecture, these memories to go back and reminisce about this person, but also the repetition of 8 p.m. And so the story is that on October 2022 in Korea, there was this Halloween gathering where a bunch of people like rushed, and there's like 129 people that end up dying. And so this is set as a story as somebody who was a partner of someone who went to this event and was expecting them to be back at 8 p.m. And so there's this recurring each and every day 8 p.m. brings up all these memories of their partner who died within this tragic accident. And so the center of gravity of this piece is very much a narrative driven emotional presence where it's trying to tell the story and the memories. And it's using the second center of gravity is a lot of the spatial architecture and kind of visually telling the story spatially. But there's also a cat that allows you to be this portal interface into the afterlife, that you're going in between the physical reality and the transcendent realm beyond reality to look at kind of more of the spirit perspective. There's also a generative AI component within this piece where you're asked at the very beginning to kind of recall, if you're looking out your window of your home, what would you see? And, you know, when I first did it, I gave this really kind of speculative, imaginative, like a snowman on fire, you know, and I just disassociated to make it clear and distinct, which I think was perhaps a mistake because it was distracting throughout the course of the piece to see like these flaming snowmen within the context of this larger like grief loss. I mean, I didn't necessarily know what the story was going to be about exactly. And so I did it again with the normal prompt, and it was a bit indistinguishable as to like if I were to actually describe what I saw outside my home, it'd be difficult for me to really trace my agency throughout the piece. And so I guess I had in some sense an artifact of me being able to trace my agency through this piece. But there's this deeper question around what is the role of generative AI within the context of these stories? And they've actually used elements of generative AI to like generate the kind of unique nature of each of these 8 o'clocks. There's going to be some sort of variation each and every time you see it. So there's both the generative AI response to you, but also like having some potentiality and variance based upon what is actually said. And so there's a generative component, which when I was watching, I couldn't necessarily know what was being authored versus what was being generated by the generative AI. But there's this kind of these deeper explorations of these topics. And so there's lots of different like themes of incredible loss and grief and the malaise that follows that, the allusions to the afterlife of the explorers, the theme of, quote, loving someone for a long, long time beyond absence. There's also this cyclical nature of time, the chronos time of every 8 o'clock, there's the same moment that you're recurring each and every day, but also the kairos, which is looking into these different auspicious moments, these memories, these cycles that are coming back. And it said at the end of this piece, October 29th, 2022, 159 people did not return home from Taiwan. The hour stayed still. So we're covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with the director Min Young and the producer Sigmu happened on Saturday, August 30th, 2025 at Venice Immersive in Venice, Italy. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
I'm Min Young Che, director of APM and the Cat. I studied filmmaking in Korea. The transition to immersive is after visiting Sundance Film Festival 2015. At that time, opened my eyes to immersive storytelling, and showing Space by Girl in South by Southwest 2018. I've been working for cinematic VR for 2 players, such as Nine VR and Girllamp Radio. And recently, I'm interested in how using generative AI to immersive storytelling. So what does lead to this project? So APM and the Cat, yeah.
Okay. So yeah, go ahead and introduce yourself and what you do in the realm of VR. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Sigmu Lee, producer of APM and the Cat. And I'm the director of the Art and Technology Lab, where we produce this film with the other VR project for almost like 7 or 8 years.
Great. And maybe you could give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into working with virtual reality.
Yes. I already shared my background. I studied filmmaking, and 2015, I visited Sundance Film Festival, New Frontier section. So I saw some VR films in there, so it opened my eyes to immersive storytelling. So I started from that time. So it's enough.
And he also made a film called 9VR, which was introduced at South by Southwest 2019.
Yeah. 2020.
But
the COVID, because of COVID.
The same year as Scarecrow, and we developed that together. And then that film go to South by Southwest, and Scarecrow went to Sundance at the time.
And just a bit more context, is your background and your journey into this space?
My background? Yeah, I'm a filmmaker. I've been a traditional filmmaker. I made some action film with Hollywood, and I've been a writer, and I'm still a writer. But I got into a VR about 10, 11 years ago when I first wear the, actually in his office, the Oculus SDK 2, and I kind of see that as a feature of storytelling. So since then, I try to find a new way of storytelling in combination with the traditional filmmaking. So we've been doing immersive theater, volumetric, and also AI-inspired or AI-oriented storytelling. And this is one of our recent projects.
Yeah, and I'm curious if you could share a little bit about where APM and the Cat began. Where did you begin with this project?
Okay. The project began with Joto about APM. It's the one moment, end of the day, when you are home, relaxed, maybe with someone you love. But then I come across the interview of the victim of Itaewon crowd crush. They said time stopped after that time. So I started wondering, how does the hour begin to feel different when it's no longer peaceful but filled with absence? So I also feel like that in Korea, there hasn't been enough space for mourning. At the time, government tried to surpass the public grieving process. So not long ago, the firefighter who responded to that accident was suicide recently, so that really stayed with me. So we use immersive technology to make kind of space for the mourning. That is to my project. Yeah.
So a space for people to go and to see a story and to grieve and mourn about their own losses, it sounds like.
Yes.
And I'm just curious from your perspective how this project came on to your radar to be involved as a producer?
Yeah, I mean, most of our work from AT Lab, I was either a director or a creator, but this one is I'm just a producer, so I didn't initiate this. And I watched the very early stage of the APM and the Cat, which was a very different story. And then we kind of talked together how to bring the generative AT, not generative AI, not just for the sake of AI, but what can it tell the different, what it brings, a different aspect into the storytelling, and how can we use it subtly, and also how can we use it as a tool to express very personal feeling or theme the director wants. And in that sense, we kind of talk a lot to find a way to incorporate those new technology into a very personal and very sad story of the modern tragedy and bring people into somebody else's very private spaces without intrude his privacy. So we kind of try to make that new technology work in the context of his personal vision. That's what we sort of have to bring that together.
Yeah, so there is a generative AI component into this, and we'll get into that here maybe in a little bit, but I first want to hear the development of the process, because it sounds like that you developed either like an early version and showed it. So just curious to hear the development process for the story of a man whose partner is killed in an event that happens in Korea where a lot of people were rushing in a very small space, and a lot of people died. Over like 150, 160 people died in this event. And so, you know, this perspective of a partner who is facing that loss and that grieving. And at that time, you know, 8 p.m. is maybe when he expected her back, or, you know, it just kind of time stopped, as you said. And then, but there's also a cat motif, that there's a cat that's there. So just curious to hear where you began with starting to piece together the story that you wanted to tell around grief and mourning.
Can I talk about the more technology, the vision of the technology? It's okay. So I'm interested in exploring how real-time generated images and voice could breathe inside the world of the story. So I approached the use of AI in the story very carefully. So I didn't use generative AI to respond audience dialogue or actions. Instead, we used it to express the main character's sense of loss and absence of someone. So I wanted to make the gently shape the feeling of mourning through the AI. So to invite the audience to the emotional space. So I did two approaches. One is I treat the AI as an actor. You know, actor on the stage, performance change a little bit different depending on the mood of the day and energy of the space. So I thought of the AI in the same way. So the monologues and images it generated, they're never exactly the same. There's always a bit of randomness, like little emotional variations. So each person meet a different APM, I think. So second is I ask the audience to share something about their APM and what do you see through the window at the APM in your ordinary life. Then I gently, the input keywords gently blended in the background of the story, outside the window. So I didn't want the audience to control the story. Instead, I wanted their world to connect with Haru's, the main character, not directly, but through soft emotional bridges. So this was my approach about using AI to develop the project. So,
if I add something, and we talk about this a lot, and this is my take of the whole idea. And when I say this, is it yes, but maybe not 100% consent or agree. But I think what we or he is trying to do is, first of all, to your question, when it first came. When I first saw it, developed from the other courses, was not about, there was no generative AI. It was about, we visit the dead person's spaces in a kind of ghost POV, but it becomes another story where we visit the man who loses his love and we kind of enter into his private spaces. And why generative AI? For me, this is not, it's not like somebody tried to console somebody, tried to, you know, give the strength to somebody, that's too intrusive in a way. I think what we're trying to do is that this is a story about the man whose time stands still and he doesn't want to go out. So his window becomes a wall in a way. He's trapped time and space. And how can we bring him back to life in a subtle way? It's not by just try to say a kind words or encourage him. We as an audience just imagine something we see outside of the window, and through the generative AI that appears in his room. So it becomes some sort of like a comradeship in a way, in a very subtle way, that this is outside world I see. And it begins a little crack into his world and change that into the window. This is how I interpret this story. And the importance of generative AI is, first, no other medium can bring that word into the image in a very different way. Secondly, there is no writer or director to create that images. And it's not that like you should see outside, there are birds flying, you know, there are trees outside. That's too up on the nose, and that's not the proper way to console somebody's remorse. So we kind of suggest in a very subtle way to see what I see through the power of the generative AI is a very, in a very neutral way of storytelling. And by doing that, it kind of give him the strength to live again. And I think that's kind of subtle way of incorporate generative AI in the process of overcoming the sadness is what I like about this project.
Yeah, I had an experience here at Venice a couple of years ago from Topomancer, where you would go in and it would ask you to share like memories of your childhood home, and then it would recreate my memories in a way that was not even close to what my home was. And so I found it like there was some ethical things there in terms of almost being protective of my own memories, of like not trying to let generative AI recreate my own memories because it was going to disrupt or corrupt my memories. And so I remember Craig Quintero telling me, you should just be highly speculative and talk around dragons or whatnot. And so when I read the prompt, I didn't read closely or clearly. And in the prompt, it says, it's 8 p.m. Nothing special is happening outside. What do you see outside your window? And my answer that I gave the first time I did it again just because I felt like I wanted to see it from a prompt that was more closer to the context of the piece. I said, I see a fire-breathing snowman, which was very absurd, but that was just the first thing that popped in my head. And I mean, the good thing is I was able to trace how that image was able to appear throughout the piece. If I would have said something more neutral or abstract, like rain or whatever, then I think it would have been more difficult to understand that, you know. But part of what I experienced was that sometimes this fire-breathing snowman would actually disrupt my experience of the story, just because, you know, there's some moments where this man is, you know, who's lost his wife and is flipping through a picture book, there's a picture of my fire-breathing snowman in his picture album, that it felt like for me, well, that's not my story. And that it also felt like, well, this is taking me out of the emotional grief of that moment. And so I found that being asked to kind of give any general prompt in some ways took me outside of the story more than made me feel connected. So anyway, that just curious to hear some thoughts.
Actually, we put many efforts to prompt engineering, so filtering those things, so keep the, you know, emergent. So words far from the story, we filtered and we try to blend very subtly and gently, but sometimes we paired, you know, but we try to, yeah. So we try to keep the balance of the distance of the audience's word and story's word, so just want to make the sensitive emotional bridges. So yeah.
the fire breathing snowman was not filtered.
Sometimes, yeah.
But if we kind of elaborate a little bit of my former statement, maybe a little bit absurd, of the fire breathing snowman could make somebody break out of his room in a way. So, you know, like remorse can be recovered in many different ways. It's not just a kind words or console. Maybe somebody says something very stupid or so very out of context, which can break the window, and it also can bring me out. But I understand your point. You kind of see your snowman all the way, and it kind of distracts you from the context of it. But I think that's a kind of cool distraction and AI can give. And we kind of have to have the kind of friction to embrace that kind of friction in the story of the AI storytelling. I think that's one of the beauty of it, in my opinion.
Many of users actually input very gentle keywords, trees and clouds and birds and, you know, snows. And so almost all audience bring the keywords from their life very carefully. So
it didn't mean that your theory was not careful.
Yeah, I mean, in some respects, when I was going through the experience, I was like regretting, you know, like, oh, why did I say that? And I'm like, but it did, it, you know, the benefit was that, you know, the next time I said, oh, I'm in a suburban neighborhood and, you know, whatever, I see trees. And then, you know, the way that got translated was just felt like generic enough that was still not really what I would see from my building. I'd get the sense, but it was harder for me to trace my own agency throughout. But I guess it gets to the question of, like, to what point does my input improve this experience or improve my own relationship to the story versus it becoming you know, detrimental to the story or distracting from the story. And so I felt like my first take of it was more distracting than, because it's actually a very sad story that, you know, it's a man who is dealing with an unexpected loss and grief. And I was like, well, am I really adding to this part my own experience, or is this something that I feel like is taking me further away from the point? I think part of the prompt and prompt engineering is having enough context as to what the story even is to kind of understand how it fits in. I mean, the prompt does say nothing special is happening. Don't be too crazy with your prompts, but just look outside your window and say what you see. But so, yeah, just I guess it's to this deeper question of the role of AI and how it could either improve something or not be controllable in a way that makes it a worse experience for someone to go through. That's what I was kind of left with, was like, oh, like, how is this going to work? So I'm just curious to hear how you see this integration and what the best case scenario would be as you're moving forward, and what you would hope for people to have an experience of when they're using this kind of generative AI prompt to enter into the story.
This is a difficult question. I didn't want the audience control the story. As I mentioned, I think the mourning is, I believe the mourning is endless things. So I don't want to fix the scene and give the scene the past. And you saw the sad story and you need to empathy to the sad story. I don't want to make kids using AI. I try to make something new kind of storytelling about the mourning. So I just want to make something. I want to make something that can keep changing and keep existing, because the mourning.
But isn't that not just the AI? Isn't that just a problem of all the interactive storytelling? Because you really cannot control your actors or audience's responses. For instance, when we did the Scarecrow, somebody was misinformed that his quest is stealing the heart of the Scarecrow. So he was just chasing the Scarecrow's heart all the way for 15 minutes. And of course, we couldn't deliver, but he was having fun in a way. So, you know, that kind of friction and unexpected thing is something we try to, you know, control. We can do it, but we kind of lose the beauty of the openness of the interactive storytelling. So in that sense, to me, like AI or any uncontrollable elements in the interactive storytelling is pretty much the same in a way, to my opinion, but you may think differently.
What I want to tell was the, I try to make the mourning is, my intention was use AI very carefully and gently blended in the story. So, you know, as I mentioned, many effort to something that get audience to immerse. So that was really hard to prompt engineering. So I want to make it very subtle experience, very gentle and subtle and changing little, every time change very slightly different than like actor. So I wanted to find a new possibility of experience. Yeah,
and my take on AI is I think there's use cases where it really makes sense and other times where it may either be pushing the limits of the technology are hard to control. And so I feel like it's this area where you have the ability to get people to be more immersed into the story, having conversation with the characters and having ways of immersing yourself into the world. But then sometimes, you know, having me have creative input into the story can sometimes be a distraction for me, I've found, and sometimes where it's a story about my own memories or something where whatever is generated is never going to be matching my own experiences. And so it feels like it can actually break presence in a way where it actually takes me outside of the experience, because my imagination or my memories of my childhood home, which was another experience from Topomancer, it was just so far deviant from that, that it was hard for me to suspend my disbelief. So I feel like it can have this plausibility of whether or not I feel more immersed or less immersed within the experience. And so that's at least some of the experiences I've had so far.
The important thing was the monologues, generating monologues. Generating monologues help audience to immerse the main character's emotion, I believe. So generating monologues and images make audience to be present in main character's emotion. So that's my intention. Yeah, that was my intentions.
Yeah, we've been talking that why generative AI and why AI is writing the monologue for him. And for me, again, this is the distance between spectator and somebody's very private area. And it's not him telling the story. It's just interpretation of very neutral entity. I kind of imagine. So his inner monologue is kind of listening, coming from his thought, and I listen to that, but it shouldn't be him because he's not in the mood of telling something. And by just looking at him and by looking at the history of it, somebody's telling and who. Is that what I like about the AI? One aspect of the AI is that neutrality. You know, like if I go to the therapist, I never go to the therapist, but if I go, I probably don't want to talk to him in my private area because he's another human being. But if he's just neutral, intelligent entity where he can help me out, I can open up my heart more easily in the way, and people are using AI for the therapy purposes. I think I kind of have that kind of similarity here where you very carefully approach somebody else and you're hearing something, but it shouldn't be coming from him because I don't know him very well and he's not in the mood of writing, but I still have to hear something. So it's kind of my imagination and the mood and his story combined together, but yet still structuring something which we can understand and identify with. And in that sense, why AI is narrating, I think that's my interpretation, my justification as a, you know, partner or as a spectator, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's some recent conversations I've been having with people that are a little bit more critical of AI, where they warn against the anthropomorphizing of AI into humans and giving it human qualities like intelligence and understanding, which large language models don't really understand. I mean, what you're talking about is a little different in terms of a therapy and therapeutic context, but also just recognizing that they aren't neutral. They do have a lot of bias in terms of the data that they're trained on. And so, yeah, there's a lot of pushback and I think critiques that I have around the AI where it's actually a lot more limited and constrained than that. And so I guess it's, for me, finding use cases where it makes sense and understanding those constraints, limitations, but also, you know, knowing some of the trade-offs of things that you may have something beautiful or something that is disconnecting or breaking plausibility or breaking presence. So, yeah. But I did want to also talk a bit about the actual VR experience of the piece, because we've talked a lot around the AI, but you have this context of being in a room and just different ways that you're modulating the space over time to give this sense of isolation or loneliness or loss and grief. And there's a cat that's there that's also, you know, close pet that gives a familiarity. But then you, over time, are also taking us into other versions of the rooms that are filled with memories or ways that you're collaging aspects of their lives so that you get a sense of taking a tour to the spaces for the memory, but also this recurring 8 p.m. that gives this sense of there's a loss that, you know, every day checking in at 8 p.m. to see like this was the time where time stopped, as it were. So yeah, just curious to hear if you have any other elaborations on how you were trying to design the spatial environments to tell the story.
약간 공간적인 디자인에 관련된 거.
그렇죠. 그러니까 APM 할 때 뭐 어떤 공간 디자인의 원칙이라든가 그 시간을 계속 다시 리비지트 할 때 어떤 아이디어를 갖고 만들었는가 뭐 그런. 아, 저
코리안으로 얘기할게. 네. 그러니까 그 시간이 반복될 때 그 시간에 어떤 새로운 감정의 방이 언폴드 되기를 바랬고 근데 그것이 이제 점점 그 이미지로 만든 방으로 발전이 되거든요. 그걸 한번 설명해 주세요.
이미지로 만든 방이라는 게 어떤 의미지? 그러니까 처음에는 그냥 어떤 한 면이었는데 그게 점점 방이 된.
처음에는 만화 커튼만 있었지만 나중에는 그 방 안을 들여다보는 씬에서 보면 만화 커튼으로 이루어진 감정의 방 같은 걸 만들었는데 그걸 디자인하려고 했고요.
Yeah, what he tried to do was that whenever he revisit the APM, the space evolves in a way. So from the beginning, it is just a couple of drawing on the paper. Now at the end, it kind of forms the loom-like shape. So it becomes like two-dimensional to the three-dimensional from paper to a room as his emotion evolves. That was the design principle of this piece.
And why the cat in the piece and in the title?
Cat is kind of emotional companion. Maybe Mina's cat is from the Mina, the girlfriend. And the cat, you can say cat is a lazy supporting role, right? So just sleep and do nothing. But last scene, cat recognized Mina, the butterfly flies, and in that moment, Cat acts as if she is there. So I think in that moment is important, the casting Cat. So yeah, that's my answer, yeah.
In Korean culture, Cat is like transitional, we call it a spiritual animal, where they can see different worlds, almost like the exorcist in a way. So it connects Mina, who's dead, and Haru, who's still alive, and he's in the threshold of two worlds, in a way. So I think it doesn't have to be that simplistically symbolic or something, but I think it does represent that quality. And as, I don't know how many people follow it, but we begin to hear the one's monologue, maybe not his or you know somebody else's, but apparently belongs to narrative of Haru. And then we suddenly hear the female's voice, which is Mina, who's gone already. Probably that's lingering in the mind of Haru, but that means he's begin to accept the existence of her, which she kind of denied it. And Cat is there at the threshold of Mina's world and his world. And at the end, symbolically, Mina probably is in the form of the butterfly, say the final words to him and leave. So it's kind of mediator of two worlds. And it also belongs to Mina, I think, be Mina's cat, who still have memory of her. And then maybe Haru doesn't want to connect any of the other Mina's belongings, but the cat is still around him. So that's, again, like the audience members, it kind of make him break through that solitude or the closeness of the despair. So it's kind of, it becomes like, in my opinion, like it, like audience member and cats make him open up the world to alive again in a way.
Yeah, there was almost a shift of perspective at a certain point where you're of the man who lost his girlfriend or wife in this accident. But at some point you see like more of a third person perspective of the man in the apartment. And it's in some ways I read it as, oh, okay, now I'm from the woman's perspective or Mina's perspective, looking in and kind of remembering, or almost from beyond, from another realm. And you have visually kind of like a really long building with like a painting, and then there's one cutout that has like a window. So it kind of felt like a liminal afterlife space. But yeah, just love if you could maybe elaborate on that perspective shift and also the environmental design of looking at back into this world, into the apartment through this more magical realism depiction.
You remember very detailed.
Yeah.
Okay. Incredible. Yeah.
Better than me.
Yeah. Oh my God. You were asking about perspective shift, right? I try to make it kind of a conversation between who is alive and who is left. So that was my intentions in that scene. That's a simple answer.
And what about the design, the world design as well? Because it feels like we're in a liminal space or a space beyond space and time, but still kind of a portal into the mundane reality. But the outside was like another reality that was different. So just trying to get a sense of the intent of that contrast.
Yeah, it's apparently it's a POV of the dead person in that different world, looking into the real world where she belonged and saying final goodbye in a way as a symbol of overcoming. So yeah, you're right, really right. He designed it specifically for that effect.
So window is very important mediator between two worlds, and from the perspective is inside room, and the woman's perspective is outside the window, so they can kind of, you know, conversation through the windows. Yeah.
Mm. In Korean culture, there is, we're saying that for 49 years, the ghost lives right next to you, and he doesn't go away. And after 49 years, he say final goodbye. I don't mean that it's the same thing, but it's like, for me, she couldn't go because she's trapped and she didn't admit that she's gone. So she, as a, you know, so spiritual entity, she was just move around and wish that he can move on. And then finally, with the help of the AI, help of the audience members, or then he kind of embraces his own remorse and he go back. The time moves again painfully, but that means that he's ready to go on, and she says goodbye to that. And then Cat is reacting to it, so, you know, as a butterfly form. That's my interpretation. We've been talking about this all, and he doesn't want to be as specific as me. He was like, maybe right, you know, maybe yes, yeah. But like, we kind of, you know, talk about it, and I kind of see it. I mean, director doesn't have to be too much explanation. He just makes something from his gut. And it's our job as a producer or audience members try to make the shape out of it, shake out of it. But in this case, I think it's pretty clear that, you know, there are some people think it's poetic, but there are some progressions. For me, there is a reason why AI is narrating, and there is a reason why audience member is typing something, so that we can bring the person who trapped inside his own mind and the tragedy move slightly on, and then she's saying goodbye. And I think that is very touching, in my opinion.
Yeah, I did notice in the credits that it looked like it, you were having some of the narration being generated by AI, so maybe you could just talk a bit about that decision to have the AI voice as a part of the narrator of a piece like this.
So, as I mentioned, I want to treat AI as a actor. So actor on the stage, the perform slightly different every time. So I think it's very similar with generative AI's quality. So I decided to use generative AI for the monologues. So you experience never the same monologues. It's slightly different. It's important for the morning because I don't want to the fixed script or, you know, fixed monologues, because morning, I believe morning never ends. So my message was that, so I want monologues a little bit different every time. So that's why I use generative AI for the monologues.
Okay, so every time you do the experience, you get slightly various different monologues?
Yeah, we have script, but it different slightly every time.
Yeah. Okay. And what were some of the technology you used? Because it seemed like you're on the quest and maybe doing all things locally. Are you using like a local Llama model, or what kind of technology stack are you using in order to facilitate this large language model interactions and generative AI components of your piece?
We used ChatGPT 4.0 from OpenAI and 11 Labs technology to generate MonoLabs. Yeah.
Okay, so each time people are seeing the experience, you get new text and new, that's all being dynamically...
In near time, so we call API and we generate text using OpenAI's model and then give to 11 Labs and generate voices. So we make it in near time. So.
Okay, wow. And do you have a sense of how much that costs for to exhibit?
Maybe $2 or $3, US dollars.
For every screening, it costs you $2 or $3, okay.
Yeah.
Ouch. My question, right? Yeah, we've been talking about that, you know, and why generative AI? And I think thematically, because he cannot talk, you know, he cannot say anything. He's not in the mood of narration something. He's not ready to spare something. Somebody has to speak for him. And who can it be? You know, it cannot be some voice actor, or it cannot be a writer with different threads of the writing. So in a thematic level, it makes sense. But I've been arguing with him that, you know, you're the only one know that it's a different type of the monologue, and the audience is just take it as just a written form. So in a meta level, we know that this dialogue is keep going on because Limorous never ends, and it has different version of it that's very poetic and beautiful in design. But as an experience, as an audience member, do they know about it? And that's kind of a question we're still talking about it. Yeah. But I think the intention was right, because we wrote something and cast the voice actors and have like 5 different of the monologue. I think the effect or the ethics of the storytelling would be very different.
I just want to explore the new dimension of the AI's possibility, so I focused on that quality of the AI, the randomness and, you know, kind of improvisational things. So, yeah.
As I watched it, the 2 times I watched through it, I didn't notice the differences, and I also didn't notice that, I just assumed that it was written and authored rather than, I mean, there's a part of the prompt engineering that is the authorship, that is a way of generating the script, but I didn't realize that it was generating both the script and the voice in real time. So yeah, for whatever it's worth, I didn't notice that was the case. But yeah, I have similar questions in terms of, you know, the feasibility of the long term. But yeah, I guess as we start to wrap up, I'd love to hear what each of you think the ultimate potential of virtual reality with XR and AI all coming together, and what it might be able to enable with the future of storytelling.
You should just pass that to me. I think AI is not replacing us, or AI is just a tool. And again, like I'm very much impressed as a traditional filmmaker what it can do, and democratization of the authorship and everything that's gonna happen. But I'm more curious about the new level of this authorship, new level of the creativity, which we never experienced before, and try to embrace the friction or uncontrollable side of the AI, which has, of course, some ethical questions. But also, we are moving into some sort of like different humankind with the health or curse of the AI. And it's too late to be too ethical or object to it, or, you know, to embrace it too much. I think we kind of embrace it as a new condition and find a way of the storytelling never been able before. And I kind of looking into that kind of possibility, and that kind of make me very excited. It's very different from VR. It feels like Close Encounter of the Third Kind. You know, we are in the era of new human evolvement in a way, and also the same as a creative evolvement way, where human cannot control everything. We have to embrace them as our co-creator or partner or even our mentor, sadly. But there will be another possibility by having that powerful
creative source next to you.
괜찮은 것 같은데. 어.
Agree?
Yeah. 괜찮을 것 같다고. 예. 그러니까 AI 미래에 대해서 얘기하자는 거지.
그러니까 새로운 어떤 가능성 같은 게 뭐가 있는지.
사실 그러니까 저는 좀 더 이제 그 그러니까 한국말로 얘기할게. 관객의 무의식적인 측면을 AI가 캐치해서 좀 개인화된 스토리텔링을 만드는 쪽에 관심이 있다. 앞으로는 그런 쪽에 좀 관심을 두고 있다. 네.
Yeah, I mean the micro personalization, customization, where we target very subtle and specific uniqueness of a human being and target the storytelling customized to that human being is where he's very interested in, and it's going to be. I mean, it's a new way of storytelling also. Everybody has different way of, you know, hundred thousand different stories from one design, and that's very very interesting way of storytelling in my opinion and his opinion.
Yeah. So I have a little more interest about the personalized experience. The AI knows the user's unconscious things, or you know, not the direct interaction, you know, the kind of knowing audience, so reflect audience. The I mean, desire or attitude, or you know, unconscious things, and the reflect to storytelling. So I want to explore more like that after that. Yeah.
Anything else left unsaid that you'd like to say to the broader immersive community?
That's okay. It's just actually hard to express in English, sorry. That's okay, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, well, thanks so much for taking the time to share a little bit more around your process and journey, and a lot more around the design of AI and how that's going to be integrated into your own storytelling practice and process. And yeah, I think we're still very early in terms of where this is all going to go, and all the technology and AI models will continue to develop and evolve, and I'm sure that 5 to 10 years now we're going to have a lot more capabilities for what's even possible. So yeah, just interesting to see what works, what doesn't work in this, and inviting people to participate but not derail in a way that I accidentally did in my own way in this piece. But I think it's speaks to a larger point of user participation going to either increase their immersion or make them more disconnected. And yeah, and also it's a very sad story that you're telling and of mourning. And so I think within its own right, it's, you know, exploring the spatial dimensions and, you know, metaphoric ways of going through our memories and thinking about loss and grief. And yeah, so other ways that you're exploring that theme as well. So anyway, lots of different things that we're able to cover and talk about, and just very much appreciate taking the time to talk about it all.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for tuning into this Venice Immersive 2025 coverage. And hopefully you found some use in some of this documentation of these experiences that are very ephemeral. And some of these show at these festivals and they don't really go out widely beyond this a lot of times. I mean, maybe they are, but you may not be in a place that it's easy for you to see them. And so it's a real privilege to be able to see all these experiences, but also to be able to sit down with these creators and have a really deep, in-depth conversation in a way that there are not a lot of other opportunities to really dig into at this level. And so I really appreciate all the time from all the creators to be able to have these conversations, but also for you to take the time to listen to them. And also it's been a challenge of trying to find a way of speaking about these experiences in an abstract, theoretical way, or at least in a way that I can ground it and allow you to put yourself into the experiences to kind of imagine some of these different things that they're doing, how I'm experiencing it, but also the different types of design decisions that the creator is making. So if you find this useful and want to support this type of effort of both documenting the history of immersive storytelling, but also to support this kind of wildly ambitious independent journalism project that is very much driven by support by listeners like yourself. So please do consider becoming a member of the Patreon at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening.